Thanks again to all who have read, help us open the meeting, and I take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. Extend a warm welcome to any visitors to our meeting and a massive welcome to any newcomers that might be with us tonight. And we hope you hear something that's going to encourage you to keep coming back. So like I say, we are a speaker meeting. Our speaker is going to speak for 40 or 45 minutes, and I'm going to hand you over to Jay, who's going to introduce our speaker tonight. So over to you, Jay.
I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
I look forward to hearing the speaker because I've only met him in the last couple, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I know he hails out of Philadelphia. He's got some clean time, and he's doing lots of meetings. I met him down at NA at home. Hearing his experience, strength, and hope, because what I've heard so far in the meetings has been really good. He's doing what we're supposed to do. So, Mike, without further ado, would you share with us?
Yes. Thank you, Jay. I'm Mike. I'm an addict.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
Hi,
Mike. Hi.
Welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. Everyone is so warm and welcoming in these meetings. I'm so grateful, so grateful. I'm nervous, of course. I haven't shared, my experience, strength, and hope like this in some time. But I'm going to try to remember what to do, what to say, and how to do it. I'm a very grateful addict, very grateful addict. Like, I've really enjoyed meeting Jay and that meeting early in the morning. And it's under the suggestion of my sponsor, who I talk to regularly, of course, and knowing that my spiritual condition had been weakening over these past year because of COVID, because of a relationship, because of attitude and complacency, he said, "Mike, you got to make some meetings." So I take that. I'm here because I take suggestions. I'm still clean because I try to remain teachable and take suggestions. Like Jay had mentioned, I'm clean. June 4th was 28 years, but I'm a newcomer today as much as I was the day I moved in, I came here. And I just have to remain teachable. So I come from a large family, Northeast in Philadelphia, which is on the East Coast of the United States, and Pennsylvania, in between Washington, D.C. and New York. A large Lithuanian-Irish family, 9 children, alcoholic father. It was up in, I grew up in the 60s. And it was just, my home was pure chaos, Father Blotto in the chair, everybody upstairs getting high, and it was perfect. It was great. And time went on, and I just, my drug of choice was very simple at the time. And when I got to my early 20s, I met a woman, and she said, "Oh, well, let's change this drug of choice, and this way we could have more fun." And we changed that drug of choice, and my entire life changed at that moment. My life was just controlled, driven, absolutely focused on the attainment of that drug, that one drug, and nothing else mattered. Nothing else mattered. I didn't see it coming. It wasn't a career choice to be an addict, right? But it just took control. I'm an addict, and I didn't know it. I didn't know that there was a power that wanted to kill me. I heard this very simple explanation of the first 3 steps. I just love it. 1, there's a power that wants to kill me. 2, there's a power that wants me to live. 3, make a decision. If you want to die, stop here. If you want to live, go on with the steps. So for the next 16 years, I got clean at 40. I'm 67 now, or 39. I'm 67 now. So I'm clean 28 years. So, you know, it was just it was just horrific. I mean, I just destroyed anything and everything that came in my way. Relationships, love, careers. I've always had, I'm in the interior design business. I'm what they call a drapery installer, right? So the gift of that was like a carpenter, right? But you just go hang drapes and blinds for people, right? You know, I was lucky in the fact that it saved me from a life of crime. Because if I hadn't had that ability to go hang some draperies or blinds for somebody, make a couple hundred dollars and go use for a couple days and go back and make some more, I don't know what I would have resorted to, right? So anyhow, so, you know, of course, you know, in the insanity of using, there's just pure suffering and chaos. We all know what that is. We wouldn't be here if we didn't. You know, there's an ice cream store in I guess on the East Coast. It's called Baskin Robbins, and they're famous for having 28 flavors, right? And I often refer to hell as, you know, it's our, you know, there's 20, you know, like when we come in, we all have our different flavor of hell, right? You know, my particular flavor may not be yours, but it's the similarity of knowing that we all come from the suffering from hell that brings that creates the unity that we have. That is the miracle of this program. So of course my active using was filled with geographic changes, right? You run from city to city, or from relationship to relationship, or wherever, friend to friend, and you just burn everything you can. You know, it's a rape and burn. And but you know, there's so many cliches that I just love. You know, when it comes to geographic changes, it's like wherever you go, there you are. Like I went up and down the East Coast, you know, and it didn't matter. You know, Miami, Key West, Washington, D.C., New York, wherever I went, there I was, an active addict, and I found a way to use, and I found a way to take advantage of whatever situation and person, place, or thing that I was around. And then, you know, they say when the pain gets great enough. I did have an opportunity. You know, we often talk about, well, you know, to be humble or to be humiliated. There was a moment when I was humiliated, homeless again, running back to, you know, the family home, living in the basement. My mother was still alive at the time. And, you know, I was humiliated, but I was not humble. I had no idea what surrender was, what powerlessness was. I was, you know, the beautiful thing about insanity is you believe it, even though it's totally insane. And so this was around 30, 32 years old, whatever. So I got like 4 months clean and I was like a parrot. You know, you said it, I said it. You did it, I did it. But I didn't do it because it had meaning, or I didn't say it because it had value. I just did it because it just sounded good. And then I can remember, you know, living, and then slowly, you know, they say recovery is like a country song in reverse. You know, I got my dog back. I got my truck back. I got my apartment back. I got money, right? And I remember one Saturday, I don't know if it was the same day, but I lived above two recovering addicts. And they looked at me and they said, Mike, you know, come here, let's talk to you. I said, what? They said, Mike, you know, we haven't seen you. I think I had like 4 months at the time. And they said, Mike, I haven't seen you at any meetings. You know, you're not stopping and talking to us. You know, what's going on? And I can remember, you know, there's moments in our lives, active addiction and or recovery, that are memorable, or that you just remember them for their, you know, how important they were. And I looked that couple in the eye and I said, I know what I'm doing. What are you talking to me? I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't know exactly what I said, but I remember saying, I know what I'm doing. And I had no idea. I don't know if it was the next day or the next week. I had a pocket full of money. And I had an apartment, and I said, well, I can do it differently. I'll do it. And boom, another 6 years of, you know, losing I nevers. We have a phrase, I don't know if you do, you know, across the pond, but, you know, every time you go out, you lose another I never. You know, I never overdosed. I never was, I never this, I never that. And every time you relapse, or at least for me, in my experience, luckily it was only once. I lost two or three more I nevers. And luckily I survived. And I ended up in, of course, more geographic changes, you know, just pure full tilt suffering, overdoses. I mean, I overdosed on a drug that you never hear people overdosing on, but it doesn't matter, right? I ended up in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, living in a what they call an SRO, a single room occupancy, a crack hotel, right? Filled with, it was like a bowl of granola. What more? Fruits, nuts, and flakes. And I got evicted from it after a year and a half because I couldn't make all the money in the world. I couldn't pay $50 a week to live in my crack hotel. And my particular flavor of hell was not pretty. Not pretty. I don't know if I need to go into specifics, but it was alone in a room, surrounded by pornography and 40-ounce bottles of beer filled with urine. And that's where I lived the last 3-4 years of my active addiction. Finally I lost my job, of course, and I was homeless immediately, of course. I used to stand on the corner. I used to get paid on Thursdays, but I would beat my boss up so hard for my check on Tuesdays that he'd just shut me up and give me my check. And I had a partner in crime. We would both beg him for our checks. And we'd get our checks on Tuesdays. We'd be fine on Wednesday. Thursday, we'd start to hurt. And then Friday, I don't know what he did, but I went to the Lower East Side of Manhattan, into the Village, and I'd make a sign, great jokes, 50 cents, three for a dollar, money back guarantee, the Joker. And I would tell jokes on the corner for 50 cents apiece. And I'd be like this depressive lump of like, give me some money for the first 20. Then I get 20, run down the street, cop, come back. Then I'm like on fire. I get another five, buy a 40-ouncer, and then poof, party's on. So here I am, homeless with my NA luggage, which is two trash bags filled with whatever I thought had value, which was dirty clothes, and that was about it. And I'm on the lower, and it's funny. You know, they say fate favors the prepared mind. They say if we choose to recover, if we make that decision that, you know, things will align for us, you know, things, there help comes, right? Hell, if we, you know, if you choose to get a day clean, I believe help will come, right? So there I am on the street. And I don't know how it happened, but I'm telling jokes. I got nowhere to go. Somebody had saved money, had sent me money, an old girlfriend. And I had enough money for a ticket back to Philadelphia from New York. I'd spent, I told her I needed 10 times what I really needed. And I spent it all on my drug of choice. And it's midsummer, June 4th is my clean date. And I'm sweating my bejeebies off. And I'm with my NA luggage, telling jokes. The crowd clears, and there's a Hasidic Jewish man there davening. Davening means praying. He didn't know me from a can of paint. He just saw such desperate suffering that he was drawn to me, bought me lunch, took me to the train station, watched me buy a ticket, and watched me get on the train and walked by the train so I wouldn't jump off. How that happened, how that happened, I don't know. But somehow the universe knew I was done, and it afforded me the gift of that moment. back to Philadelphia. And I think I used one of the, my mother had passed. I had already taken it, ripped her off while she's dying of cancer in the hospital. My father had already committed suicide. A couple of my brothers and sisters are scattered all over the United States, many of them using, a couple dead from overdoses. None of that mattered. They say all that matters is, who am I, what am I, and what am I going to do about it? And had I had enough, could I surrender to my disease? So I had a brother I forgot about. He called me and he got me into a rehab for free. And there I was just, I was this, you know, the drug is just the symptom. My disease is just so much more than what the drug is, you know. So I was just a madman in that rehab. They therapeutically discharged me because I was so loud and obnoxious, and that's just my flavor of insanity. Then I got funding. I got into another rehab right after another 2-week rehab. And I was so out of my mind without a drug. They therapeutically discharged me because I was detrimental to everyone else's recovery. And they handed me a bus ticket and they said, you know, get out. And I said, well, get out. Are you kidding? And again, I landed in Philadelphia, and the same lady that helped me get out of New York found a halfway house. And there I was, well, of course, in the rehabs, I was introduced to 12-step meetings. But in the halfway house, a 6-month halfway house program, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous and other fellowships. But and there they just hammered me into, you know, here I am 40 years old. And I don't need to be told what to do. Meanwhile, I'm a child. You know, they say our development, you know, emotional, whatever, stops when we pick up. So I picked up at 12. So I'm a 12, 13-year-old boy. Get out of my way. Leave me alone. That's mine. I'm first. I mean, just, just obnoxious, self-centered, self, you know, just horrible, immature behavior. But they hammered me. I was so bad. I was staffed twice. Staffed means they're kicking you out, but they bring you in front of the 14 member staff, and they just give you an instant fourth step and say, listen, this is what you are. You got to get out. And I stood in front of them as obnoxious as I could be and said, you're not kicking me out. I'll show you. I'll do what you're telling me to do just to prove to you that I'm better than you. Meanwhile, they're trying to save my life. They're trying to save my life. Shut up, Mike. Go to a meeting, Mike. Wipe your butt, Mike. Do your chores, Mike. Be on time, Mike. Get a job, Mike. You know, just the basics of normal living, which at 40, I didn't even think I needed to know. And I had no clue of. And so then once I started recovering, and it's like 3-4 months, and then I became, you know, all that, the bag of chips, the change. And I'm the only one with a license, and I'm using that as power and control. And they realized it, and they were going to have a blanket party. That means they put a blanket over you and they beat you so you can't identify who's beating you. That's how, you know, that's how the 24 other guys in this halfway house felt about me. Right. And I was staffed again. And again, I was in their face. I'm not leaving. Meanwhile, they're saving my life. Narcotics Anonymous, these people who could, they loved me, you loved me, until I was able to begin to love myself. That's what you told me, Narcotics Anonymous. So out of the halfway house, what a gift, what a lucky miracle to not use, like every moment, every moment, like a day clean is a successful day. Oh my goodness. So I get into my, I go, I make my, you know, at this point, you know, I get my first home group, and I get my first sponsor, and he starts a step group. And I'm like, what's that? And they said, well, this is what we get together every week, and we go over the steps, blah, blah, blah. And I said, all right. And I didn't do these steps because I thought I'd have a spiritual awakening. I did them because you would like me. I could say, look at me. I'm on step one. I'm on step. It was I was just pure self-centered ego, obnoxious, you know, look at me. Meanwhile, I get lucky and I don't use, you just surrounded me. So by the time I get to step 12, I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm different. It was like, you know, and they say there's two kinds of spiritual awakenings, you know, the lightning bolt, which I didn't get, or the educational variety, right? Where you slowly change minute by minute when you don't use. I mean, all of us are in the process of a spiritual awakening as we sit here this moment. I don't care if you've got a day. I don't even care if you're not clean. It doesn't matter. If you're here, you're moving toward a solution, right? We're spiritually awakening slowly. Anyhow, so I had the educational variety, a slow changed, hammered by 1 minute, 1 day, 1 week, 1 month at a time. So I'm still in that step group. Not that one, but I've been in a step group. Every Monday night, I'm with, you know, the group that I'm with now. And that brings me to, you know, the basic suggestions of you know, what, you know, there's no, you know, I was talking to someone with a lot of time, and it reminds me, like, who has the most time and what's it mean? And often I'll say, whoever gets up the earliest has the most time, you know, in this wonderful journey we're on. But I just lost my train of thought for a minute. So done with this. So support, you know, I have a sponsor. I'm going through a lot of stuff now. Maybe I'll touch on it at the end. And I could not make it. I have to remain teachable. I mean, for any, at any moment, I mean, I need a power greater than me, myself, right? Often it's you, the rooms, Narcotics Anonymous. As I referred to hell being, you know, what's your flavor of hell? It's the same thing with a power greater than me. What's your flavor of a power greater than you? In fact, I just had a discussion with my sponsor about it. I said, well, I don't like the word God. Support. So I have my step group, I have my sponsor. I've lost my home group, right? Because it's not meeting in person, right? You know, I've been through so much in recovery. I've probably made every mistake there is in recovery, other than 13 stepping, thank God. But boy, was I tempted. Got married. My wife was, my ex-wife, I should say, was an addict, is an addict. 20 some odd years of marriage, two wonderful children. Divorced now about 3 years. So where does that bring me to today? So when COVID hit, you know, all meetings shut down, and I struggled, right? You know, I got complacent. I'm like, I'm okay. You know, I didn't like Zoom meetings. And it's funny how, you know, things happen, right? So early, late summer, I'm not making meetings. I'm just making, my meeting attendance went, you know, in the early recovery, I just hammered this program, or this program hammered me, you know, for years. I was just regular attendance off, you know, whatever. But so now since COVID, I was just making my step group, really, on Monday nights. And then boom, a relationship comes out of the woodwork, and which just knocked me straight off square. I'm 67, divorced 3 years, lonely. You know, my spiritual condition is in question. Not question, but it's certainly, I'm not as grounded as I was, for sure. And it just, I fell like a rock. And I am now 6 days clean, from that wild ride that I never saw coming. And if it weren't for my step group, who literally, when it came crashing down, I ran, you know, I in fact, I wasn't even going to go to my step group that night. It was Monday night, a week ago, or the earlier this week. And I just the week before told them what had happened. I had become, you know, I've been talking to my sponsor about this relationship. And he said, Mike, you can't talk about her because it has nothing to do with her. It has only to do with your behaviors. And, you know, he asks me some very, you know, difficult questions, which I don't really know how to answer sometimes. Like, Mike, is this behavior just because of this relationship, or is this the behavior you've been battling your whole life? You know, fifth and sixth and seventh step stuff, self-centered fear, all of it. And I had to, with difficulty, I had to tell him I think it's what I've been trying to deal with my whole life. Anyhow, so I run to my step group because I ran from her house, and they, as they helped me with my divorce, by just holding my hand, giving me hope, just support, give that unconditional love that you, Narcotics Anonymous, offers to all of us, no matter who we are, no matter where we're at in our recovery. Monday night, they said, Mike, where's your phone? Mike, text her, it's over. Mike, delete the number. Mike, block her from Facebook. Mike, block her from WhatsApp. And I just like a child said, okay, I'll do that. Okay, I'll do that. Just like when I came in, you said, Mike, get a sponsor. Mike, get a home group. Mike, work the steps. Mike, regular attendance to meetings. Mike, work the program. And I just did what I was told because I just knew I had to. And thank God I didn't use. A friend of mine said to me, Mike, you're closer to drinking and drugging than you've ever been. And I'm like, no, I'm not. What are you kidding? He said, Mike, that's not the real problem. That's not the real problem. I said, what is? He says, the fact that you don't know it. And I had to hear that because I have to have an open mind to be remain teachable and to say, wait, maybe he's right. Maybe I don't see it coming, because I just certainly didn't see this relationship coming. I certainly didn't see myself begging, which is what I did. I was as much an addict. I'll end this with this last thing. I wanted to see her on Facebook, right? She blocked me. And yesterday I'm with a friend and I lied to her. I said, let me see your phone. She said, what for? I said, I want to see her on Facebook. Oh, no. Oh, no. I know what you're doing. And I was as much an addict without a drug in her house as I was with. And I went right around her to a friend that was in the house and used his phone because I was in such a grip. Obsessive, compulsive, lost, fearful. Oh, I mean, the drug didn't even matter. I was as much an addict at that moment that I'd ever been with a drug. Anyhow. Once again, Narcotics Anonymous saves me. So if you're new, just keep coming back. If you didn't hear anything, if you didn't can't identify with anything, just keep coming back. No matter what your head tells you, no matter what you think, whatever, just keep coming back. And I hear that message and I yield to that message every day. And I've been making a meeting now for about, I guess, the past 10 days or so, pretty much. And slowly my spirit is coming back. Slowly I'm becoming grateful again. Slowly I'm able to say, hey, I'm grateful to be alive, grateful to be clean, grateful to have the support that I have. And there was a time when it didn't even matter. It didn't even matter. So I'm so lucky, so grateful. And thank you, Narcotics Anonymous, for continually saving my life one day at a time. Thanks. I'm Mike. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.